Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Whoa, God, Lana Squalachi, how dare you? Oh, that's a long doc, too. Holy cow. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Monday. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, because it's Monday. Yeah, there you go.
Yep. I'm Molly Wood. Thanks for joining us. What happened behind the scenes is that we're doing a little Zoom test to prepare for video because we're training someone. So clearly we were just looking at ourselves and then the music started and we panicked.
Yeah.
I am back for one day only. I caught up on the episodes with Kimberly. She's so great. It was like listening to a show that I have no part of. It was kind of delightful. I was like, oh, this podcast is kind of nice and interesting.
There you go.
Who knew? So we are going to do what we do in the podcast department here, do the little news fix, make you smile, get back to laundry in one of our cases.
Get the hell out the way. Yes. No. I have to throw a new load of laundry in, but I can't do it till later tonight because we got, you know, rolling power blackouts and hotness and all that stuff. So I'm going to be a good citizen.
Oh, have they started? I must have just missed them.
Down here where it was crazy hot. So, you know, anyway.
Yep.
Okay. So Monday, I'm going to go first. I got 1.5, and I'll start with the easy one. Actually, they're both real easy because I can't anymore. Number one, I would like New York City to get over itself. Your mayoral election is not the most important thing on the planet. Shut up.
Dude, seriously?
That's my home news item. Can I just tell you, Andrew Yang and Eric Adams and blah, blah, blah. And yes, it's the biggest city in the country, but come on, man. God, I'm so sick and tired of that election.
I am so happy that you said that because those exact words flashed through my mind earlier today. I was like, when can I stop caring about the New York City mayoral election? I do not.
Right.
I do not care.
It's
So just, there, that's West Coast media for you, people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just such a solidification of the New York, Washington media access and access, and how it's gotten just completely out of whack the past 18 months. It's just, it's God, makes me crazy. Anyway, so that's my half-ish item with a brief rant. Number two, and I know I'm a little bit, both of these items are a little bit outside our you know, sweet spot. But the story in the Washington Post today, based on a book that's coming out from two Washington Post reporters, Damian Paletta and Yasmin Abu Taleb, about the Trump administration's response to the coronavirus is simply cray-cray. And I will just read you this line from the article in the paper today about this book. They got an advanced copy. Don't we have an island that we own? The president reportedly asked those assembled in the Situation Room in February 2020 before the U.S. outbreak would explode. What about Guantanamo? End of quote. As in, what about sending people in the United States who are infected to Guantanamo?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all I have to say. It's two I cannot even news items for me today. I just can't.
I also think that the nuggets that keep emerging from this book are going to feed an entire week of news cycle, if not more.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, the literal only positive thing that I took from one of the stories about it, in which, you know, evidently Jared Kushner created this just sort of toxic, terrifying environment of fear and everybody's going to get fired, was that at least in his case, it was mostly because it was like, get masks to people and get testing solved. It is such a low bar that I was like, well, at least there was a sense of urgency around PPE, if not actual competence in getting it out to hospitals and frontline workers. Yeah, it's bad. The next 3 years are going to be such a drip, a steady drip of revelation of the stuff that we were not seeing, that we sort of knew some version of it was happening, that it, I think it's going to get really, I don't know if it'll get like overwhelming and numbing or just continue.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we're all pretty numb.
Send the infected patients to Guantanamo. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Don't we own an island? Yep.
Yeah.
Not a good feeling. Not a good feeling. No. Which is why I'm actually going to flip-flop the order of my two items and say that, as we have discussed so often on this show, that, you know, a slow response, a virus that is allowed to spread, and then, of course, the extreme inequity in the distribution of vaccines, both in the United States and, but more importantly, around the world. Those are the things that lead to virus variants. And now we have one that's looking like a doozy, for lack of a better or more elegant way to put that. The Delta variant, we talked about it a month ago, I think, because that's when the CDC officially designated it a variant of concern. They think it has now tripled to 31% of all U.S. cases in just 11 days. It's the dominant variant in most countries where the virus is still spreading quickly. And it is, they think that it is a little bit, if you've only had one shot of your two shots, you may be more vulnerable to it. It sickens young people at a higher rate. So far, if you've had two shots, though, I mean, the vaccines are holding, right? And this is the most important thing that we need to keep saying.
Yeah, that's the thing.
The vaccines are holding against this variant. And what it means is not that it exists and we need to panic all over again if we're vaccinated. It means we need to panic about getting everybody vaccinated in the United States and in the world. There are some, there are like seven states that were listed in a story earlier today that have vaccination rates sub 30%. Of adults.
Which is kind of amazing.
This thing kind of amazing. Is going to rip through those states. Just rip through them. It's still like, it's such a weird thing. California opened up, you know, I know New York did in early June. California opened up on the 15th. And there's this sort of sense, I think, among a lot of people like, okay, it's over. And it's just.
Super not.
If you're not vaccinated, you are really in a lot of danger, and that danger is growing by the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
So there's that.
Boy, wah, that's tough
for a Monday.
So,
yeah.
Monday.
Okay.
I want to point out this story that is not going to get a lot of attention before we move on to Make Me Smile, and I know we need it. We've been covering internet a lot on the tech show, of course. The internet is everything is the overarching name of our series. Access to internet, and we're going to do a lot more reporting as some of those federal dollars start to come in, because the dollars in the second round of relief funding, there's a lot of broadband money there. And then there is even more broadband money potentially in whatever infrastructure bill makes its way through Congress. So one of the things we've been talking about a lot is the places where this investment in broadband has actually really kickstarted access, because we have a major digital divide problem. And one of the ways that that's happening is through something called municipal broadband, where, you know, just cities create their own, or states create their own. Yeah. There are 22 states that have laws against this. Most of those laws are like written by industry. You can't have city broadband because Charter or Comcast or Cox wants to provide service there. And on the eve of all of this money coming in, and lots of states and cities are saying, oh my God, this is fantastic. We can use this to extend internet access in places that companies just have not built because it was not economical for them to do so. There was language, it was reported today by digitalinclusion.org, which is the National Digital Inclusion Alliance, that there was language sneaked in at the last minute, not debated, not voted on, and evidently lobbied for heavily by Charter Communications, the dominant ISP in Ohio, that would essentially forbid municipal broadband forbid the use of federal funds to build out local broadband networks. It would also potentially even essentially prohibit not just cities and counties, but school districts or library systems in Ohio from owning, operating, or partnering with a network that provides what is known as broadband speed access to any users in an area that already has access to what is basically dial-up, 10 megabit service up and one down and one up. That's a complicated thing to say, but what it basically does is come in on the eve of federal funds arriving and preempt the use of those funds by even schools and libraries to close the digital divide. And this needs reporting because it is, frankly, it is breathtakingly discriminatory. Like, these are networks, municipal networks are, you know, often provided at lower cost. Libraries and schools that might be trying to use federal funds to set up local networks to serve their kids, especially if they can't necessarily come back to school, will be shut out by this kind of language that came into this state budget bill and was voted on, passed with a Republican majority. All the Democrats voted against it. And now is, I think, set for a little bit of further debate, but needs to be reported on.
To think about, like, if, I mean, we've talked a little bit about, you know, regulating the internet as a utility, and mostly it's been along the lines of like Facebook and some of the big platforms. But think about just the wires, right? And how, imagine if electricity were like offered and limited and regulated in a discriminatory way like this is. Think about that would mean.
Well, because that's what only private companies.
Yeah.
This is like private companies saying cities and states will not be able to provide electricity to houses. Only we can do that. And if there's federal assistance to try to close a digital divide that is demonstrably leading to bad economic outcomes for lots and lots of people, or in this case, you know, freezing to death, right? Sorry, you get to freeze to death, even though we have not built out our electricity service to your house.
That's right.
But we're going to make sure that nobody could come in and provide you with electricity at the moment when tons of money is coming in that would allow you to do that. Like, this money we've been reporting is like a game changer on reservations in parts of the country that are essentially internet deserts.
Yep.
And you have industry sneaking in language at the last minute with no debate saying, nope, sorry, you're going to be left out in the internet cold until we can be bothered to get to you.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, Leon.
Smile time. I know. Please? I really brought the bummer.
You kind of did. It's
so sorry.
Welcome back. Okay. So
the crowd.
I am a soccer fan. Yeah, that's right. Where's Kimberly Adams when you need her? I'm a soccer fan, and I've spent much of the past week or so watching some of the group play in Euro 2020, which is the European Soccer Championships, and today was amazing because Denmark beat Russia 4-1. Number one, they beat the Ruskies, which is always good.
Yeah,
I know. Number two, if you follow the sport, you know that 9 or 10 days ago, a guy by the name of Christian Eriksen, who was a player for the Danish national team, literally had a heart attack in the middle of the game and collapsed, and was, according to the doctors, dead on the field. They did CPR. They revived him. He's fine, recovering. Don't know if he's fine. He's certainly recovering and may have a long way to go. I don't really know. But Denmark needed a huge win today to guarantee that they would advance into the next round of this tournament, and they beat the Ruskies 4-1. And that made me smile. I was very happy as I was sitting there watching the game, writing Marketplace. That's it. That's what
I did. That's amazing.
Go Denmark.
I missed all of this.
Oh, and they were in Copenhagen, too. They were in Copenhagen. So that was even better.
So it was bananas. Yeah.
It was great.
Also, 4-1 is just like a scoring fest. I mean, that is a fun game to watch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Aw. Yep.
So there you go. That was mine.
I want to get into Euro 2020. That's a great one.
There's still time. Yeah.
I'm like, it's such a weird feeling to be like back on the road. It's very confusing. Yeah, I'm like, I missed all of that because I was traveling for work.
Yeah. I bet. That's funny.
Well, I also brought sports because I was absolutely delighted to wake up to my first breaking news alert of the day, which was the Supreme Court ruling unanimously that the NCAA does not get antitrust exemption, broad antitrust immunity, and that, in fact, they are going to have to do more for student athletes. That does not yet include pay them necessarily, but it does mean support them through school with education-related benefits like computers or internships or academic achievement awards or just the ability for them to get through school in a supported manner instead of giving every single minute of their time and attention to their sport that they don't get paid for and sometimes starve because of. And the fact that it was a unanimous decision, I think, says that the day of... I just reported, this is a little bit of a spoiler because this explainer for Alexa is not out yet, but just recorded one talking about how much money Mike Krzyzewski makes as the head of the Duke men's basketball team. How much, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. You know, it's crazy. Like, and that was a line from Kavanaugh's, I think it was a concurrence on this one, right? Billions of dollars. Billions of dollars generated by these athletes that go to coaches and institutions and agents and blah, blah, blah. And bupkis for these guys, except like meals, you know? It's crazy.
And sometimes not even that. I mean, remember there was that whole, like, all these pro athletes were tweeting about how when they played for NCAA, they would sometimes literally go hungry because they didn't have any money and they have no time to work.
Right.
And you cannot pretend anymore that this is not a commercial enterprise. It is. So anyway, I just, that was great news. I think that's great news. This wall should crumble, and it's starting to.
Totally agree.
That's awesome.
Totally agree. And it is definitely starting. So there you go. She brought us down, then she brings us back up. Ladies and gentlemen, Molly Wood. All right. So
Sorry, that was
a very brief visit from Ms. Wood. Molly's out. Kimberly's back. We're talking critical race theory tomorrow, which is going to be super interesting. What it is, more importantly, what it's not, because it's coming up in a lot of places in this country in a unbelievably politicized manner, including my local school board. And we're going to talk about what the conflict is over that idea that's honestly been around for decades. And oh, by the way, now has just in the last like 2 years gone thermonuclear. If you've got questions about that or anything else, send us an email or voice memo. We'll take them both. Make me smart at marketplace.org. Hook us up. Hook us up.
And I will see you on Friday. I'll be back on Friday for drinks.
Friday. Oh, good. Okay. Yeah.
Not all leaving you hanging the whole week. Sure. Make me smart is pretty, unless you, you know, decide I'm too much of a bummer and ask me not to return. That would be fair.
Maybe we'll just change the settings on the Comrex, Molly. And I'm sorry, what?
Oh, it's so we couldn't get her.
We couldn't get a hold of Kimberly.
Couldn't get her. And Kimberly had her 19 ingredients ready to go, so she made an amazing cocktail.
God, yeah.
Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Today's program was engineered by Liana Squillaci.
Bridget Bonder is the senior producer. The executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves. Donna and Bridget are doing the little hot switch thing, I guess, for another couple of weeks.
The dance-ity dance.
And then Bridget's back. Yeah. Who knows?
Look at us streamlining our credits. We're spreading them out. We're just spreading the love throughout the week. But it gives us more time to vamp, apparently.
Yes, it clearly does. Clearly does.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.